we interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Standing by.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Happy Friday to you. And it is a TGIF Final Friday in September edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports, kicking off live on 103.7 The Game. Good to see your face. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D. I can't see yours, but I can see his because I'm back today inside the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. High school football, LSU football, Saints football, and a little Pels all on the docket. But we're charging out the gates today talking Raging Cajuns football. Billy Napier and UL, they've made the trip to Statesboro, Georgia. Huge game tomorrow, 5 p.m. Central Time. UL at Georgia Southern, and an opportunity to start the season at 4-1. An opportunity to get a leg up on basically everybody but App State in the Sun Belt Conference. And here's the way I would sum up the importance of this game. I believe the sweet spot for Cajun wins this season is somewhere between 7-9. Look, they lose tomorrow, get plagued with injuries, especially if it happens at quarterback. I suppose 6-6 isn't impossible. On the other hand, they win the next two games, which means tomorrow at Georgia Southern, Wednesday, October 9, at home against App State, they win those two, catch a break with the injury bug. 10-2 would still kind of be borderline miraculous, in my opinion. In reality, 7-9 wins. That's the sweet spot. I believe if they knock off Georgia Southern in Statesboro tomorrow afternoon, it'll be more like 8 or 9 dubs. That's one or two more than last year. So again, we've been saying this for a while, but we're not exactly LeVar Ball. You can't just speak it into fruition. You have to go out and make it happen. But I do feel, and I think everybody in this community can feel, that there's something special in the making with what Napier and company are doing with Raging Cajun football. Anybody that wants to say, well, Ben, hold on. Mark Cutsmith had 4 straight 9-win seasons. He did. That was 9 with the bowl win. Take nothing away from those seasons. That was the golden era in the program's history. But the Sun Belt then, in my opinion, isn't the Sun Belt now. Sure, Arkansas State was still churning out head coaches to Power 5 programs, but App State wasn't in and certainly nowhere near the presence that they are now. App State just went to Chapel Hill and beat North Carolina. In the time since Hudspeth really started doing what he did here in Lafayette, we've watched Troy beat LSU. We've watched South Al beat Mississippi State. We've seen a number of teams win Power 5 football games. So I think the conference is starting to gain a little bit more luster. And for the Cajuns to be climbing back toward the tip top of the Sun Belt, my opinion is it's a little more impressive this time around if they can do it. And so that sweet spot for victories is somewhere between 7-9, I feel like. 7 was the total last year. A win tomorrow, I think, going into the first bye week of the season at 4-1, the Cajuns are going to find a way to be more like 8-4. 9-3. And wouldn't 9 wins in regular season be something absolutely remarkable for a group that really is still getting its footing in terms of recruiting and turning a culture off the field into wins on the field? So, Clint, as we break down tomorrow's game, I'm going to spit out 3 keys at you, and I want your response to each. Let's take them one at a time. Can the defense repeat its effort from the first 3 quarters at Ohio this past Saturday? There were garbage time points given up. The first 3 quarters, however, keeping that Bobcats pass attack into single digits, just about all of that duration, it was incredible. Without Chauncey Manag, with Andre Jones stepping in, can they do it again?
I think that's going to be the biggest key of them all whenever you just look at the Cajuns is the fact that their offense has been on point all season long, but the biggest thing that's affected them is that defense over the last few years. You've seen a lot of issues at that second level, but I think they wound up turning things around this season especially. And I think they can do that again against a triple option team that they've struggled against in the past, but I think they turn it around this year.
Speaking of that triple option, and speaking of a starting quarterback that's set to return after LSU knocked him out with a shoulder injury earlier in the month, technically at the end of August. How well can the Cajuns linebackers corral Shy Wertz now that he's back at the helm at quarterback? We don't need to spend too much time there because I think you just touched on it. But it's kind of a subset of the first question. My third and final question is going to take us to the other side of the football. And you want to get in, especially if you're wearing red on a Friday, into our conversation. Give us a holler. 706-0111. My third and final question, Clint. A paramount key to the game, in my opinion. Yes, the Cajuns are rushing for a ridiculous 324 yards a game. It's incredible. Almost 8 yards per carry. But I want to know if Levi Lewis is capable of extending drives with his arm. I think that's going to be the order of the day tomorrow, not time after time. But I think he is going to have to convert throwing the football. A lot of that has to do with the types of down and distance situations they set him up with in third down. It has to do with play calling. I'm not telling you that the Cajuns will be ineffective running. I think it's impossible for any of the Sun Belt teams to keep them below a certain total. But Georgia Southern's got the type of team that's battle-tested, right? They've played at Minnesota. They've played some Power 5 action already. I think this is a game where Lewis is going to have to step up and maybe play as well as he did in the second half against Mississippi State in the opener.
Exactly. I think it's going to be huge. And something I talked about earlier in the week with you about the fact that you got to try and keep that Georgia Southern defense honest. They're going to be expecting the run. They've seen all the film. They know what's going on, and they know how potent it is. You have to keep them honest. And Levi Lewis, if he's able to go, let's say, 200 yards or more, and probably not far off from there, and a couple touchdowns, he's going to keep that defense honest, and it's going to open up the run game, and that could wind up being a rout.
And so LSU on a bye week, that means just about everybody you know, almost everybody you know, they're going to be at a wedding this weekend in Louisiana. Cajuns fans, they'll be married to the game tomorrow, 5 p.m. Central Time. Saints fans, who dat nation gets to watch everybody else come and go. They've already watched Green Bay fall from the rank of the unbeaten in the NFC last night. They'll see everybody else, except for two really bad AFC teams that play Monday night, the Steelers and Bengals. Everybody else plays before New Orleans and the Cowboys on Sunday night. I'm excited to preview that game. We got a lot more coming when it comes to the team with a star on their helmet against the team with a fleur-de-lis on its helmet. Big program today, and we haven't had our next guest on in a long time. In fact, on the other side of this break, we amend that problem. Andrew Lopez, now an NBA reporter for the Four Letter Network. I've spent a lot of time in high school press boxes with Lopes. The fact that he is now working for the mothership, proud of that guy. And his main focus is still the New Orleans Pelicans. So we'll touch on that and a lot more. Andrew Lopez coming aboard in the next 4 minutes at straight up 5 o'clock, a straight up G. Justin Vincent talking LSU football, might get him to weigh in as well. Because the Steelers had a big three, Roethlisberger, Bell, and Brown. One of them's injured, out for the season. The other one is enrolled as a Chippewa online at Central Michigan University. And the third is playing running back for the Jets. How the hell did that happen? We'll talk about it with Justin Vincent. He spent a lot of time up in the Iron City. At 5:45, Glenn Gilbo of the Daily Advertiser going in on LSU football. And then from 6 to 6:30, Raymond Parse III joins me. We get you ready for week four in the high school football season. We call it football night in Acadiana. So don't go anywhere. Big Friday show coming right back at you. It's B2BS. That's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
This show won't protect your quarterback or cover downfield, but it's got animal control down pat.
Oh, if you see a possum, try to kill it, okay? It's not a pet.
Back to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Guest real big. At least we think so. Welcome back in. More of the good stuff on a Friday. Quickly, let's take you out to New Orleans. Aboard the Ardco Equipment Hotline, our good friend Andrew Lopez, now an NBA reporter for the Four Letter Network. Lopes, welcome back in. I can't tell you how good it feels to be able to say that, bringing you in.
Appreciate it, man. It's it was quite the summer, so I'm glad to finally have that kind of put to bed, and I really can't wait for the season to get started, really, on Monday.
That's right. Media Day Monday. Practice begins Tuesday for the New Orleans Pelicans. Tell us about Zion Williamson. What's he been up to since the draft? And then a two-parter, some of your expectations for his rookie season.
Yeah, he's been in New Orleans pretty much since summer league. He hasn't really gone anywhere as long as, you know, Jackson Hayes, Nikhil Alexander Walker, all of those guys have really been in New Orleans for probably about 2 months now, kind of getting acclimated to their new city, trying to figure out where, you know, how NBA life works. So they've been scrimmaging, they've been practicing, sometimes at Tulane, sometimes at the facility. There has been you know, some work going down at the Pelican facility, so they haven't always been able to get to work there. But you know, recently on the NBA rank that we put out, he was, you know, 42nd, which is a predictive measure. People think he could be a top 50 player this year. I don't know if he gets the top 50, but I would expect him to at least get on SportsCenter and put up some you know, some big dunks every at least once or twice a week.
You know, extending that topic, I guess how much can we expect Alvin Gentry and this coaching staff to kind of load him down, right? Especially on offense, how much burden are they going to put on him, and maybe how much can he afford on the other hand to let the game come to him?
Yeah, well, you know, if you're going to try, if you're the Pelicans, to actively, you know, you think you can make the playoffs, but as pretty much any basketball fan knows, you're in the West and it's hard. You have a lot of competition out that way. So it remains to be seen exactly if you're going to go for a playoff race. And if you're not, you have time to kind of let him adjust, you know, try to let him figure out this NBA plan of his. You don't have to throw him out there. You don't have to have him, you know, playing 38, 40 minutes a night. You could play him 30 to 32 and let him try to figure this thing out. So they're going to do that, but also that's why they have Drew. That's why they keep saying every time, I think, David Griffin talks, he talks about how it's Drew's team. Drew is going to take a big offensive burden. There's some people in that organization who think that Brandon Ingram could end up being their leading scorer this year. So obviously he's going to take on a bigger role and possibly an average 20, 22, 23 points a game. So you're not going to put everything on Zion early, and you have some other guys that kind of take that off of him, unlike most number one picks when they go into a bad situation.
Andrew Lopez, our guest. We're talking Pels now. I do want to get to a brief bit of football later during our chat on 103.7 The Game. An interesting interview that Lonzo Ball granted, I believe, with Woj earlier today, distancing himself from Pops, LaVar Ball. How realistic is that, and what could it mean for his growth? I mean, not just as a basketball player, but as a human being, for crying out loud.
Well, yeah, he goes in depth in that interview about how the differences between him and his younger brother, LaMelo. LaMelo has really kind of gone off the path. He's had quite a career. The youngest Ball brother, you know, going to Lithuania to play for what was essentially his junior year, and then coming back and playing at Spire Academy for his senior year. Now he's playing in Australia instead of playing in college basketball. So he's really had a unique path. And Lonzo talked about that, kind of saying, hey, man, you need to take charge of your career now. I didn't do that right away. I kind of let things get dictated. We were trying to build a brand for the family. We were trying to set everybody else up. But now he says, you know, with his daughter in his life, he realizes his priorities have to change. And you're kind of seeing that right now. He went and got his own agent. He's with CAA Sports now. He's out looking for a shoe deal now. It's possible he can end up wearing Nike or Puma or Adidas this year. So things are changing for him, and I think it is going to help him grow. I've seen him now get a chef. He hasn't had that before. I think Antoine Moore and a couple of other vets warned him he could gain a quick 10 to 15 pounds in just a weekend in New Orleans because of all the food. So he is making changes for the better, both on and off the court, that should help in both ways.
A storyline that I think grabbed some attention yesterday, Teresa Weatherspoon, now a member of this coaching staff? I guess what should fans expect her role will be, and any other significance that you see in this hire, maybe in particular, Andrew, on the heels of this summer bringing in Swin Cash in the front office?
Yeah, well, Swin Cash, you mentioned her. I mean, she had a big role in this. She had a big role in bringing Spoon down from the New York Liberty. Both of them were with the Liberty for pretty much the last two or three seasons in some front office capacities. And now, you know, she mentioned that to David Griffin when they brought her on, and they waited until the end of the WNBA season to get that accomplished. So on top of that, she's going to be working as a two-way player coach. She's going to be working with Josh Gray's Island Cheatham. She will be in New Orleans for all of training camp, and then she's going to spend time both in New Orleans and in Erie. She's going to spend time with those guys, no matter where they're at. And it just kind of shows how the overall infrastructure of this team is changing. They're adding extra coaches. They're adding extra player development guys. It's something you didn't see before. And it's all about how Griff talks about changing the culture. And, you know, you do that with getting talent, getting Hall of Famers in to come into your program.
Andrew, I understand the logic behind the NBA starting its season earlier and earlier, seemingly every year, right? They get to spread out 82 games, more rest before the playoffs. I really get it. But at the same time, from a fan's perspective, do you think it's good that the NBA season starts before Halloween, that it dips so much into football and, frankly, even the World Series?
Yeah, Scott Kushner of The Advocate and I have talked about this before. I am an advocate of starting the season at Christmas, and Christmas being your starting day. Started 2 months later, ended 2 months later.
Love it.
Essentially, you'd end mid-August with the NBA Finals, so you would end right before football was starting. You could have summer league in basically, you know, September. To me, it just makes sense that way. More of your season matters. I think that's been a problem. You mentioned football. You mentioned there's a lot of people don't start tuning in until after the All-Star break. And after the All-Star break now is you have 30 games left in your season. Use Christmas Day. It's become such a big day for you. Use Christmas Day to your advantage. Make that your big starting point, your big, you know, showcase as you do now, and then build your season from there. I thought it worked when they did start it on Christmas, or right around Christmas during the lockout season. But, you know, take up the whole summer basketball. Everybody's playing basketball in summer anyway, AAU tournaments and things like that. So just use that to your advantage and you know, put the finals in August before the finals. Before preseason, you kind of go from there.
I'm behind it. The only thing it would alter, which would be interesting, is the NBA draft. But let's continue to mock this up. We'll send it to Adam Silver. We're coming down the stretch now with Andrew Lopez, NBA reporter for ESPN. Okay, you're a New Orleans guy. You spent a lot of time covering the prep level. I'm having a good time imagining Edna Carr traveling to Baton Rouge tonight to take on Catholic of Baton Rouge. Are the people in the capital city even remotely prepared for what that pregame is going to be like?
I think Jarrett Roser has pretty much set himself up to be the hype man for both teams on this. He's been tweeting about it all week. It's one of those marquee matchups that you kind of love to see at this level. It kind of started with, you know, you had the big game with Curtis the first week. Carr, I mean, is really kind of putting themselves out there as much as they can. You know, Catholic did the same. They took on U High last week. You love to see, you know, games like this early in the season. And I think because of how the playoffs are situated right now, where you could be 8-2 as a Carr team and still be a top seed in the playoffs because of, you know, select, non-select. Or if you're a team like Catholic, you could be 8-2 or 7-3 and still be a 1-2 seed if you play a tough schedule. So I like it, and it's going to be, you know, one crazy atmosphere tonight when those teams get together.
Always love catching up with you. Again, congrats publicly over the air on the new gig. And I'll say this, I'm very excited to follow your coverage that doesn't have to deal with day-to-day Anthony Davis updates. Like, very, very excited.
You and me both, buddy.
You're the man. Hey, enjoy your weekend. Thanks, Andrew.
Appreciate it, man.
And that's all, folks, at least for this interview. You know that I've been planning that joke for a while now. I don't know if it landed, but I've been planning that out for weeks, Clint. Maybe even months. Glad we got Andrew Lopez back on the show. And yet we talk some football. Or I guess I should say we talk football almost all show long. Glad we got to fit in some basketball. People really starting to ask. I mean, we get texts and tweets into the program. You going to talk some Pels? What's going on with the Pels? There you go. So now we've thrown out some raw meat. Hopefully everybody is fed. You're enjoying yourself. Again, Monday, media day. Tuesday, opening practice. Zion, Drew, Lonzo, Brandon Ingram and company getting ready for action in the Big Blenda. On the other side of this break, we've got your sink or swim questions of the day. You know it's Friday. It's over-under time. Two for the Saints, one for the Cajuns. So we got a little something for everybody that's playing this weekend. Stick with us. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we'll be right back at it on 103.7 The Game.
Whether he's sinking or swimming, Ben Love is just the guy to lead you in the right direction as you make your way back home from work. Now, back to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Just as South Louisiana as they come, we lead off the program, previewing a huge game for Billy Napier and the UL Raging Cajuns on the road at Georgia Southern. Just caught up with Andrew Lopez on all things New Orleans Pelicans basketball. But right now, I want to start to gravitate toward the New Orleans Saints. We'll have a little Cajun flavor as well. But every day at this time, on Friday, we give you over-unders. It's the first of two bye weeks for LSU. So we're not going to go with over-under. How many beers will the average LSU fan drink not watching LSU football? Although that might not be a bad idea. But we'll steer away from that, Clint. Stop trying to talk me into it. I've got other ideas, mostly Saints-related, a little Cajun here and there. After the music, I'll explain.
Exciting and new.
8.5 for the LSU fans and the beers. Maybe 10.5 if they're going to a wedding tomorrow. All right, enough of that, though. I do have three over-unders for you on a Friday. Let's go number one. The Saints gained 300 yards of total offense. I was laughed off of my own program. Clint laughed at me from right here in the 237 Roof Studios in Lafayette. Blaine laughed at me standing next to me in Moss Bluff. I was absolutely laughed off my own show for suggesting the Saints might not get 300 yards of offense. And so we're trotting that back out there. Can they do it at home against the Cowboys? Sink or swim, over under, part due. Zeke Elliott rushes for 100 yards, over under. Finally, for the action in Statesboro tomorrow afternoon, over under, the Cajuns rush for 275 yards. So quickly, Saints, do they get 300 yards total offense? Zeke Elliott, does he eclipse the century mark on the ground? And the Cajuns, will they rush for 275 yards? Call us up. Let's have some fun with this. 706-0111. Clint, while we wait on the rings, give us your things.
For the first one, I'm going against better judgment here, and I'm going over 300 yards of total offense. I think last week was last week you had a lot of things go the way in terms of your prediction. A lot of that had to do with you have the punt return for a touchdown. That takes a possession away. The fumble recovery for a touchdown. I think they could have gotten to 300 yards with that and also maybe not having a whole lot of backwards penalties and seeing them one step forward.
You sound
take
like,
two steps
you
back
sound like
there.
SVP or like a gambler that hit a bad beat and you're just griping about it.
I think we all hit a bad beat there.
Cousin Dino and I have grown to just get over the bad beats. Ultimately, you will too, but you're going over this week.
I'm going over this week on that one. Number two, with Zeke Elliott running for over 100 yards, I'm pounding the over on that one. I think he winds up hitting around 125, 150. I feel like eventually you're going to see him be a force to be reckoned with in this offense because I think Dak Prescott's going to be under too much pressure, and the offense is going to have to make some adjustments, and we see Zeke Elliott get a lot more of the pie.
Cajuns 275. I know it seems like a big number. Do they do it?
I think they do it. I think they hit about 300 yards, actually. That's where I'm at. I'm hitting the over on that one as well. And against that, last week it was against my better judgment. That taught me a lesson. Never take the under on the Cajuns ever again, no matter what kind of category it is.
All over all the time for Clint. All right, I'm going to give you mine. Again, we'll take some of yours as well. So YP, you people out there in listener land, wake up on a Friday. Let's hear from you. 706-0111. Let me start off with under. I'm going back to the well two straight weeks. I'm going under Saints, 300 yards of total offense. Last week, the total tally was 265. Bridgewater threw for 177. Let's give him credit. He did throw two touchdowns. And the team rushed for 88 yards. 69 of those, nice number, to Alvin Kamara. And you're going to tell me, Ben, Clint's right. They returned a punt for a touchdown. They scored defensively. They just didn't have the opportunity. Oh, okay. Well, let's go back to Thursday night last year on November the 29th. Saints at the Cowboys. You know, the Saints that had Drew Brees at that point. Clint, do you know how many yards the Saints had against the Cowboys in Dallas last year?
I don't quite remember, but I can about
176. Like, barely over halfway to 300. 176 with Brees. It's a good Dallas defense. No, I'm not a hater, but I am realistic. I think it's possible Bridgewater could take a step forward in this game, and they could still belly under the bar of 300 yards. I'm just saying, thrown into the fire against the Rams, it wasn't anywhere near where it needed to be offensively. Against Seattle, it was starting to get toward okay, mediocre, what have you. It's nowhere near good or great. We've all been spoiled by Brees. I think now we're just realizing that a little bit more. I'm going under 300 yards for the Saints Sunday night. I am going over for Zeke Elliott. He's averaging 96 yards a game this season. But here's the thing. They really eased him back into it in the opener against the Giants. The last two games when they've ramped up his usage, Zeke is averaging closer to 120 yards a game. I think the Saints are going to have some issues with Zeke Elliott on Sunday night. Again, just because I'm going under Saints 300 yards total offense and then over Zeke Elliott 100 yards rushing doesn't mean I think this game is going to get out of hand. Quite the opposite. I think it's going to be wildly entertaining, even if it's not high scoring on Sunday night. The final one, Clint. I'm going under, but with a caveat, and this needs to be understood. I threw out a line of 275, Cajuns, rushing. Do you know what their season average is? It's absolutely astounding.
Yeah, I think it's somewhere around the lines like 300 yards.
I said it in the opening segment, 324 yards a game. Yeah, that includes the huge tally when they scored 77 against Texas Southern and their marching band a couple of weeks ago in Cajun Field. But they're averaging almost 325 a game. I don't know that they get to 275. I think the step up in competition will be evident this week against Georgia Southern. But here's the thing. I picked the Cajuns to win. I pick them to cover that 3.5 or so that they're getting on the road. I gave you that with Cousin Dino Wednesday. I believe that Levi Lewis has his best game since the opener against Mississippi State. If you think back to that one in the Dome, the way he played in particular, the final 30 minutes of football, I think that Levi is going to be put in some of those types of situations on the road in Statesboro. I think he'll respond, certainly not every time, but enough for the Cajuns to win this game and to cover the 3.5. But if we're playing this here over-under game, my friend, under Saints 300 yards total offense, over Zeke Elliott 100 on the ground, and I'll have the Cajuns not far under 275 yards rushing, but that is a huge, huge total. And it just lends credence to how dominant they've been on the ground so far this year. I'm going to say they're slightly under that mark. So there you are. You're all overs. I'm under twice out. I know it's kind of like Cousin Dino. You like it when we disagree.
I love it when we disagree. I think I think we disagree quite a bit if you just look at the history of not only the over-unders, but just sink or swim in general. We definitely disagree on a lot of things.
You know what's most curious to me out of all these picks? And we do have time for your selections whenever you're ready. 706-0111. The most curious part of this to me is that you're still so confident in the Saints over 300 yards. Blaine said last week, it's the modern NFL. Of course they'll get 300 yards. Okay. I mean, 176 last year at Dallas. Their defense this year is just as good. Didn't really get terribly close to 300 last week at Seattle. Your confidence in that one, to me, is the most interesting part. Can they get there? Sure, and I even recognize that. But the confidence that they will, I think there's a fanboy coming out.
There's a little bit of that coming out, but at the same time, you got to think about it. You bring it up by the fact, like, 170-something yards last year, and you bring up this Dallas defense is good.
Saints O-line got eaten up by Dallas last year.
But I feel like that O-line was definitely banged up towards the end of the year. This is
week four. That's true.
Week four of the season, and you bring up the Cowboys' defense still looks good. Look who they've played, Ben. They've played the Miami Dolphins, the New York Giants, sans Daniel Jones getting the start, the Washington Redskins, and who knows who they have out there. I feel like this could be an opportunity for the Saints to show that maybe this Dallas defense isn't as dominant as maybe you think.
That's a fair and valid point. And something I heard on the Jordy Holtberg show, I'm going to echo now. I really can't remember who said it, one of his guests. I do think this game is more of a referendum on how good Dallas is as opposed to the Saints without Breeze. I wholeheartedly believe that. That was a point extremely well made between 2 and 4 at Acadiana Sports Station. This game is more about Dallas because, frankly, they've got a little more to lose because the Saints, I think, are playing with house money. Split the games at Seattle, home versus Dallas. All right, check. So now I think you've got a free run if you want to look at it that way. All right, you got a free pass to call us, and now we've got a taker. So let's get out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Ken, what say you?
Well, thank you for taking my call, first of all. I think, Ben, you need to understand that was a huge win in Seattle. Nobody picked him to win. I didn't pick him to win with Brett Water at the helm. And they won it on the road. They're going to be fired up. That dome is going to be crazy. And Sean Payton is a genius. They'll find a way to win a close game. I think the Saints will be over as well as the Cowboys, but I think the Saints put it out in a close ball game in New Orleans. Their confidence got to be sky high right now. Get a big win in Seattle, man, without Drew Brees.
If that happens on Sunday night, sky's the limit. Exactly as we thought it was preseason, even without Brees for almost half the year. So I'm not putting it past them, Ken, and the win at Seattle gives a whole lot of momentum. Thanks for the call.
All right, thank you.
Can momentum and home field advantage boost this offense? Maybe. I think more likely to boost this offense is continuity, right? Bridgewater, the starter, and not just somebody who has to kind of, I guess, get it on the go in between road games in L.A. and then in Seattle. I know the team didn't travel back home, but still, it's not your everyday surroundings. Now he's back home. It's understood. It's his game plan. The other thing I'll say is this. Internally, it's obvious to me the Saints as a team knew this all of last week during their practices out on the West Coast. But externally, all of us, I mean, Clint, think about it. This time last week, you and I were debating whether Taysom Hill was going to take somewhere between, I don't know, 10 and 25% of the offensive snaps.
Yeah.
Should have pounded the under there.
Exactly.
And so this is Bridgewater's game. And so, again, continuity within it. Peyton having the confidence in the play calls with that guy in the continuity, that's all a big deal. Saints absolutely can win this game on Sunday night. I picked against them Wednesday because, damn it, it's tradition and it worked last week. And I'm not an idiot because Adino's not
Costanza.
Either. Yeah, full Costanza. Picking against the Saints in a contest like this. But I do think they're playing with house money, and we'll see if that offense can propel New Orleans toward a second straight huge win without number 9. All right, final break of the hour. When we return, we'll take some more of your calls on our over-under questions, and we'll continue going in Saints-Cowboys. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we'll be right back in, bringing you home on 103.7 The Game.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station. And you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game, live online at 103.7thegame.com. Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at 103.7 The Game.
Former LSU Tiger Justin Vincent joining the show just about 10 minutes from right now. Between now and then, as we bounce back in, I want to keep going Saints Cowboys. I let off with the Cajuns because the opportunity in front of them, it's outstanding. It means a lot. There are less games, and it's, you know, conference action. But as far as Saints-Cowboys, I think there are pretty significant bragging rights on the line. Maybe an opportunity to make a dent in the race to host NFC playoff games, but it's also it doesn't mean as much as Cajuns-Georgia Southern, but I think it's a big barometer game. I told you last segment, I think it means more to the Cowboys, who they played this year, how for real are they, can they beat the Saints without Breeze, can they go on the road and win in a tough environment. But it does mean a good bit for the Saints, too. Because here we are, after the Seattle win, I just said it. Now we're talking about the playoffs again. And I'm not going Jim Mora Sr. style, but we are talking about the playoffs without Drew Brees being active for the next five freaking weeks, at least. In fact, I think I just said playoff seeding. That's my point. You win again against Dallas, it's going to keep being about that. Not making the playoffs, but where are you seated? Do you have a bye? You lose to the Cowboys, and no, it's not going to be Chicken Little, because you split the two tough games at the beginning of life post number nine. So I think this game has a lot of intrigue to it. I want to get more of your thoughts. Whether you want to go in on the sink or swim questions or not, give us a call. Let's talk Saints-Cowboys. 706-0111. Clint, I haven't got your take on the ball game yet. I know Dino and I picked it. I picked Cowboys. Again, tradition's tradition.
Yep.
The reverse jinx, the Costanza, it's understood. Dino picked the Saints, not just to cover three and a half, by the way. I think it's been bought down to 2.5 at this point. So people are kind of starting to pound the Saints a little bit. Where do you come in?
I'm going with the Saints in this one. It feels like right now when you just look at what they've been able to do over the last week, the biggest thing for me is, in terms of being able to hold back the Saints in this matchup, is without a doubt the penalties. We talked about a lot in the last segment, or at least I did. I feel like that was something that's been hurting them the last couple weeks, is the fact that there's no real like continuity when you look at what that offensive line is doing. You're seeing a lot of offsides. You're seeing a lot of holds. You're seeing a lot of block in the backs. I feel like it's ruining the rhythm of it all. I feel like that is a big reason why, when you look at the over-under, and sure, you can bring up what I brought up earlier with the punt returns and the fumbles, the biggest thing that hurt them was the fact they kept getting that momentum going forward, and then you have a hole that pushes you back 10 yards and an offside, and that kills your drive momentum. Then you wind up looking at it, and you have to punt or kick a field goal and have to rely on that instead of having to kind of just move forward.
The offensive line was the absolute strength of this team through the first half of last season, right? The Saints group that looked like world beaters, I think we can all come out and say it. The O-line was, I mean, those were the guys, more so than Breeze. They enabled Breeze and enabled Michael Thomas, Alvin Kamara. The defense basically hit the snooze button for the first two games last year. Then they started to come on. But if you look at last year's team versus this year's team in totality, the way that the Saints defense played at Seattle, I don't get too caught up in some of the garbage time yards and scores for Russell Wilson and the Seahawks. That defense was opportunistic. And by and large, they stuffed the run, right? I mean, forced a fumble from Chris Carson and took the run game almost completely out of it, aside from Danger Russ doing what he does in the quarterback position. So I think the defense might be a little bit ahead of schedule from a year ago. Don't like the fact that they've lost Alex Anzalone. Don't like the fact that Marshawn Lattimore and P.J. Williams perhaps have taken a slight step back from what they were last year and even the year before. But the defense as a whole, they're looking okay. And then sooner than later, Sheldon Rankins will get injected back into that D-line. So I actually feel pretty good there. Now, can they withstand the barrage of one of the best O-lines in football? Dallas, trying to cram it down your throat with Zeke? That's going to be, for me, the most intriguing matchup in this ball game. But, Clint, to your point, you're looking at the other side of the line for the Saints. And they've had to deal with some injuries. It's forced guys like Will Clapp into positions that at times I think we're realizing he's not quite ready for. There have been a lot of hankies thrown for Clapp in the first three games of this season.
Exactly.
A lot.
And
right?
that's what hurt him quite a bit. I mean, we talk about it. This offensive line is still looking good for the most part. I mean, we're seeing them.
Good, not dominant.
Exactly.
And not consistently dominant.
And they're holding back the
they're holding
line.
Right.
No, but they're keeping the quarterback upright, only allowed three sacks through three games. That's absolutely huge when you just look at some of the defenses they played against, like Houston, not holding J.J. Watt to zero tackles on
right.
the night. You look at the Rams game.
Look, Ramczyk is a freak, all
yes.
right? And he has maintained, if not improved, his form from last year when, as a right tackle, he led the best offensive line of football for the first 8 to 10 games. You're not always getting it from Armstead on the interior. it's not just about guys that have had to come in and out. It's about newness. And I understand that with Eric McCoy, he's got to find his way. He might be the most important player on the field that has to keep getting his footing. And then once his sea legs are under him, they can continue to take steps forward as a group. But that position, it commands so much in the way of communication, run blocking, pass protecting, all kinds of different performance indicators. And it's tough for a rookie. So to expect him to be Max Unger was always foolish, but can he get there on the fly? It'll mean a lot against the Dallas Cowboys and then moving forward from this big game on Sunday night. All right, we got 2.5 hours with you today. Just about 1 hour in the books. Let's cap it off with one final word.
What's up, Acadiana? I'm Gabe Broussard from Strange Theories and Season 11 of The Boys. It's almost 5 o'clock. Now it's time for the final word of the hour, and it's presented to you by me and my family at the Village Station. We are your final stop to fill up your stomach and your tank when you're heading home on Maurice Avenue. Now, here's Ben. His voice is pretty nice, but I don't think he could ever make two chairs turn.
Regression. Did you watch Thursday Night Football last night? I understand that Rodgers and company scored 20-plus points, but that offense isn't where it used to be, and that defense for Green Bay has a chance to make them special this year. But give credit to Carson Wentz and company because they were able to overcome. I'll tell you, though, it's interesting to watch the Pack not be led by offense. They are experiencing, with Aaron Rodgers, some regression on that side of the ball. It's the final word of the hour, and it's brought to you by the Village Station. We'll be right back. Justin Vincent joins us. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
We are off and running. Hour 2 of 3 underway. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D. And for the next hour and a half, you've got Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 1037 The Game. It's a football Friday. It's 5 o'clock, and you know what that means. Let's get out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Our pleasure to be joined by Justin Vincent, Development Officer with the Tiger Athletic Foundation. How are you, Justin?
Doing good, man.
I got to catch football, as I told you last week, near your old stomping grounds, Carencro, in a shootout over Sam Houston. That's a pretty electric place, Moss Bluff, to watch football.
Great, man. Coach Chad Falk, who I grew up with, played football with at Barb High School, is the head coach over at Sam Houston. He's done a really great job kind of changing the culture, kind of putting it that he wants to put in. He's also a good person as well.
We'll talk some LSU football. I understand that the receivers, right, Chase, Jefferson, Marshall, who's now going to be down for a little bit, they've been eating all season long. In the backfield, Clyde Edwards-Helaire has been the bell cow. Give me some other skill guys you think take a step forward and have an opportunity in October, November to put their name in this race.
I think, with some guys being out, I think Trey Palmer might get the opportunity to showcase the talent he did on the punt return earlier in the season. He's one who's kind of stood out in my mind since he showed up. He's given us an opportunity in my season. So John Trey out there as well. So there's a few guys that's kind of earned their stripes so far. So our training camp put in the work, and they finally gonna get an opportunity to showcase the talent since we have some guys down.
What about in the backfield as they continue to maybe have an on-field audition for RB2? Who you liking, and I guess skill set wise, who might be able to complement Clyde the best?
I think all three of the guys, the young guys. I think with Chris Curry, I'm waiting for him to get some action. But Ty Davis Price is kind of in the lead for me. No personal reasons at all. Just something about him, man. He's a hard-nosed runner. He can shake you up in the hole. He has a little speed to get away. And obviously we know John Emery is just a dynamic player all around. He can do it all.
Justin, I know that you were part of the staff that evaluated film on Ed Ingram, getting him to come over from the state of Texas. Your expectations for him down the stretch of this season, how he can help James Craig's O-line?
I mean, he's the type of person we have on the line that he can be a swing guy. He can play tackle. He can play guard. I think, they might bump McGee over and put him at that left guard spot. But, just find a way to get him in there because he is definitely a dynamic player. and he showed us that early on. And, you know, it just gives us some more depth that we much needed depth at that.
Talking LSU football with former Tiger Justin Vincent on 103.7 The Game. What you used to do on bye weeks when you were playing? I'm curious, I guess, if it's changed over the years. I mean, are you dialed into what everybody else is doing? Are you completely tuned out of football? What's this week and especially Saturday like for you?
You know, for me, we only have one. Now these guys have two. But I was tuned out, man. It was hunting season for me, so I was in the woods with my dad, kind of relaxing and trying to find yourself a little bit. But, you know, some of these guys, they probably stay around. This team is dialed in, man. They know what the opportunity they have at hand. You know, just staying focused. Hopefully they just take a break, kind of wind down, let their body heal, and get back to work on Monday.
And we know that next Saturday, Utah State comes to town. It's an early game. Jordan Love and the Aggies, awfully good through the air. Is this one more important defensively for the secondary and coverage, or the guys up front trying to generate a pass rush?
You know, I think both phases. I think, you know, they got to find a way to get a rush. On the back end is going to have to keep their eyes open and make plays in the ball, because he's going to throw it up there. He's going to give them plenty of opportunities to make plays in the ball. So, you know, getting a guy like that, he can throw the ball deep and can move around in the pocket with his legs. And hopefully we can train a rush and get him to throw up some of those jump balls. And I like 50-50 balls going on.
Understanding that a healthy Kalavon Chaisson is probably the best pass rusher this team has, who else do you think maybe can help the cause a little bit and get into the backfield, cause some pressure on Love?
You know, I think Damone Clark, man, Marcel Brooks might get down in the box a little bit too. So we got some really enabled bodies that will get an opportunity to showcase the talent to kind of compliment him while Michael Divinity is kind of rehabbing. Not quite sure how long he's going to be out. He might play next week, but I highly doubt it. But it'd be a precautionary reason. But I think those young men have an opportunity, and they're more than capable of going out there and being a compliment to Clavion.
How about the defensive front? When you know that you'll be without Rashard Lawrence, they've had to do some shuffling. Tyler Shelvin playing more and more in the middle. I guess your take on those guys so far?
Yeah, Tyler Shelvin, man. I mean, you lose 40 pounds, man, and you buy in and you understand the opportunity that you have. He's showing it. I mean, he's playing some good ball, making some tackles, batting some balls down. You know, getting him more involved. Once the Ikulaka could get more involved, just an opportunity. Because these young men, they came in and they lost a lot of weight to get in good playing shape, to get in the shape that Coach Moffitt wanted them to be in, so they could be more productive, especially for their body going down the later part of the season. So I like to see those two guys, you know, get more reps, get more action, especially this week, and see if they can get after that quarterback and make some bad decisions.
Justin Vincent of the Tiger Athletic Foundation, our guest. I got you to preview Georgia-Notre Dame last week. I'm interested in what you thought about that game, because for me, I'm not going to dog Georgia too much for playing a close one with the Irish. I actually thought Notre Dame's defense looked a lot faster and ready for competition like this than they have the last few times they got a chance at it.
Yeah, Notre Dame looked really well. I only got to see a little bit of it after the game. Went to dinner with some folks, but it was exciting. You know, Georgia had it going on, you know, the lights, the red lights, the whole nine, you know, the atmosphere seemed like it was amazing. But I was kind of surprised. I thought Notre Dame would actually come out with a victory, but because I'm not one of those people that in the SEC, when the SEC playing, you know, I'm going to cheer for the SEC team. If it isn't LSU, I don't care who it is. You know what I mean? So, but yeah, I thought the game was exciting, but I definitely thought Notre Dame would have pulled that one out.
And your reaction to Auburn going into A&M, I think really in this day and age, we got to stop thinking about a true freshman, a redshirt freshman at quarterback. If a kid can go, he can go. And right now, Bo Nix is doing all that Gus Malzahn's asking him to do.
Yeah, you know, Bo Nix is playing some decent football right now. I think he'll be better as the years go. Right now, he's kind of flying by the seat of his pants and getting away with a lot of his athletic ability. He can throw the ball a whole lot better than a lot of people thought. He's a gamer. You know, when they need that first down, he'll find a way to get it with his legs. You know, I think A&M is kind of struggling. They're trying to find their way. Kellen Mond didn't have much time. I think the offensive line for them is suspect right now at best. And he doesn't have time. But he definitely has some dynamic receivers he can get the ball to and give an opportunity. But I think Auburn, you know, barring, you know, any injuries, anything like that, I think they can come out on top of that one.
All right, before we let you go, we've had fun over the years talking about your Pittsburgh Steelers, and, I mean, wasn't that long ago. It was Ben, Bell, Brown. Now, for different reasons, it's none of the three. So how do Mike Tomlin and the guys regroup, maybe not just for this season, but how does that proud franchise hit the reset button?
Yeah, you know, I spent some time a couple of days ago with Kevin Colbert. He was in the building evaluating talent. I had to go in the football ops building to see some people, and we kind of chatted about that a little bit. You know, we just got to find their way. The people are rallying behind Mason Rudolph. You know, James Conner, I think, is more than capable of getting the job done. Juju Smith-Schuster is Juju. Getting the ball, and you know, they had a trade, I think, over the weekend, through the week. So they just got to find a way, and they got to wrap up defensively. I mean, there's a lot of busted coverages, guys running scot-free down the field. That isn't the Dick LeBeau defense that I've known from the past. Coach Butler, who's there, he has to get those guys riled up and got to get them going, because they're giving up way too many points and not giving themselves a fighting chance out there.
Always love talking shop, man. We hit on LSU, the SEC, the Pittsburgh Steelers as well. Justin, thanks for doing this, man. Enjoy your weekend.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
Justin Vincent. Again, I think this is year three for him with the Tiger Athletic Foundation. One of the cool things about doing a show like this, right, there are so many people that come from the Acadiana area and go to football games over in Baton Rouge, and I hear from a lot of them, hey, man, we saw your guy Justin. He was out there, you know, in the TAF tent, right? He was out there walking around, shaking hands, tailgating, and they're all surprised, like, every time, like, this is what he does, right? He works for the fundraising branch of the athletic department, and he absolutely bleeds purple and gold. So great to have him on every Friday at 5 o'clock. And interesting, if you didn't catch that, he mentioned Kevin Colbert was in the ops building. That would be the Pittsburgh Steelers GM. Who's he there to go see? Oh, I don't know. If Ben Roethlisberger is coming toward the end of his career, has flirted with retiring, now he's done for a whole year, maybe they need a quarterback. Okay, probably they need a quarterback. And so here we are, all week long, having a conversation based off an intriguing column by Larry Holder of the Athletic New Orleans regarding the possibility of Joe Burrow becoming a New Orleans Saint. Maybe Joe Burrow can become a Pittsburgh Steeler, which would make nobody happy. Hey, that's the wrong kind of it's not black and gold, it's black and yellow. And somewhere Alan Michael would just be, cutting cartwheels up in the Iron City.
Exactly. He would absolutely love to see that. I mean, if you're the New Orleans Saints at this point in time, of course, we're only 4 weeks into the season, but I know the aspirations are Super Bowl or bust. You need to be willing, if you want to get Joe Burrow, you got to be willing to fork over a little bit, not do the whole Ricky Williams thing and give up the whole draft. I think if you want Joe Burrow, you can get him, because I've seen some mock drafts where he's like 12 or 13th getting picked. Of course, things could change, especially if he beats a team over in T-Town.
Teddy Bridgewater throws for like 340 yards on Sunday night, and the Saints win. They blow my over-under out of the water. Nobody's going to be talking about Joe Burbank going to New Orleans and Bourbon Street anymore. Everybody would be like, I told you all along, it was Teddy Bridgewater. I knew it, which, of course, was literally almost nobody about 10 days ago. And I'm not sure that it's that many people now, but the possibility does exist. Hey, it's not just a possibility nor a probability. It's a certainty. At 6 o'clock, RP3's coming in, and we will have football night in Acadiana pregame style. STM versus Neville, certainly the headliner, but it's not the only big game on our family of stations. How about VC versus Kaplan on 106.3 Radio Lafayette? We're going to be rocking and rolling. Yours truly will have Karen Crow, Washington, Marion. We're going to preview all those games and span the state as well. From 6 to 6.30, the FNA pregame show coming at you on Acadiana Sports Station. When we bounce back after this break, we'll take your phone calls, and I'm going to react a little bit to Thursday Night Football. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. And we're Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
You say tomato, I say tomato. The famous Clint D says something that none of us will agree with. Back to more top shelf analysis for your drive home. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Plenty of goods coming at you. We got a lot more show to go in the 5 o'clock hour. I want to react to Thursday Night Football. I'll do that here momentarily. We will throw some shade. Ron Hunter from Tulane, you can come on down right after the halfway point of the 5 o'clock hour. And then Glenn Gilbo of the Daily Advertiser joins us at 5:45 as we'll talk some LSU football, maybe a little Saints as well. Always good times to get G-Squared back on the program. Clint, before we do any of those things, before we go forward, we must look back. We unleashed our three sink or swim over-under questions for a Friday. I know that LSU's on a bye week, but the Saints are playing the Cowboys, for crying out loud. UL, huge road game at Georgia Southern, and we've issued three over-unders. I'll give a reminder in case we have any caller takers at 706-0111. But I want you to update, Clint, what we have on social media. Over-under number one, will the Saints get 300 yards total offense? I issued this challenge last week. I'm issuing it again. Over-under two, Zeke Elliott, 100 yards rushing. And finally, number three, pertaining to the action in Statesboro, will the Cajuns rush for 275 yards? What say the geniuses of Twitter?
The public on Twitter definitely leaning towards my side of things on all three of them. They are going over. It's interesting when you look at what's going on with the Saints over-under with 300 yards of total offense. They're going 69% to 31 on the over.
Meanwhile, it's a nice spread.
It is a nice spread. I like what I've seen from that aspect. And then Zeke Elliott over-under 100 rushing yards. They're a little bit closer, 67%, basically two-thirds of our voting audience is pounding the over.
Just about nobody listening wants that to happen,
yeah.
Except for that oddball Cowboys fan that's living in Acadiana. Like,
oh, we've got quite a few of them.
Nobody's telling you that you have to move out, but you can move out. I mean, that's still an option to you. And I understand, Clint, that you'll get to our third over-under momentarily. But right now, our man answering the call aboard the Artco Equipment Hotline. So I get the feeling we'll chop this up here sooner than later. For what it's worth, Clint also went over, over, and over. Saints, Zeke, and the Cajuns running the football. Yours truly went under Saints, 300 yards. Over Zeke, 100 yards. I'm also going under for the Cajuns at 275 on the ground. I think Levi Lewis steps up through the air, and they win this football game. And now you don't have a caller for me. So what are you just sharing sugar cookies by the bed over there?
Not a phone call drop, my man.
Nobody wanted smooth jazz, though.
Nobody wanted smooth jazz.
So that still only happened once in the history of the program.
Yes.
Could you please play some Miles Davis? I don't know what you guys are doing talking about the Saints Cowboys, but
it's either that or Brickhouse that they're asking for.
I need Coltrane. All right. We don't want any of that. Give me an over-under update on Twitter from the Cajuns, 275 rushing yards.
They are pounding the over on this one. 275 yards, 82%. Of Acadiana is all in on over 275.
Nobody likes to bet the under, right? Just sometimes it's the
I think
right
it's the
play.
Rule is to take the over.
It's not the
when it
rule.
The
it's just exciting, right? And people get excited about it. Nobody likes watching a football game and sweating huevos in the third quarter being like, oh, my God, the pace right now is setting me up for failure. Please stop scoring. I need more hard hitting. Is Vontaze Burfict available? Like, nobody gets excited about rooting for the under.
Bring back the triple option, people are saying.
Doesn't mean it's the wrong play. All right, I did say I wanted to react to Thursday Night Football. Rodgers and the Pack dropped their first game of the season. Doug Peterson and the Eagles, maybe the most underrated betting stat of all time. Speaking about the under and the over, the Eagles are now 5-0 on Thursday Night Football. And, yes, I did get a text from Cousin Dino, by the way, late last night. Like, real late, saying you could just tell your listeners to thank me later for that gift. Dino not only picked 5.5 that the Eagles would cover it, he said that they would win outright, and of course, they did. So we're starting to find out maybe a little bit that the Eagles, well, they've still got some life. And you know what's interesting? I keep issuing the Saints over-under 300 yards challenge. The Eagles were anemic offensively last night, but Carson Wentz still threw, I believe, for 3 touchdown passes, right? So they had to play in tight quarters because the Packers' defense is good. But Wentz was able to convert when he needed to. They scored enough points to win the ball game, and definitely an intriguing matchup over in Lambeau played itself out that way. And a lot of people questioning the Packers toward the end of that football game and decisions that they made. I want to let you hear from Aaron Rodgers a little bit on that ball game. And so Rodgers on the last drive and exactly kind of what unfolded there in an unlikely end of the ball game.
You know, we had a couple opportunities there, I think, to score. We just didn't quite execute. But, yeah, it hurts. Obviously, the way they were stopping the run, we felt good about those four calls. And I liked the calls, and I feel like we were close to on a couple of those to really score and tying it up.
Hey, speaking of stopping the pack and Aaron Rodgers, Doug Peterson of the Eagles had his own thoughts on what that late stand meant and, well, what it meant to get over on Green Bay.
When the game is on the line and the game is stopped, you know, for an injury like that for a lengthy period of time, you know, it's a tough situation, especially, you know, defensively where we were on the field around the 7-8-yard line. So credit the defense, man. I was twice down there. I think we held them 3 of 7, I think, in the red zone tonight. And anytime you can keep, you know, an Aaron Rodgers team out of the end zone, it's a positive thing.
And we're still trying to decipher who's for real, maybe who's the heavy in the NFC. For that matter, who's the heavy in the NFC East? The Cowboys' record suggests it's them, but for Doug Peterson and the Eagles, I'm not going to lie, I think I might like their overall roster a little better. So here's Peterson on momentum game last night.
Having to come on the road Thursday night, team that's undefeated, playing extremely well at home, and to do what we did, hopefully it gives us momentum. You know, it gives us a little shot in the arm now. We get some time off to get these guys healthy, and we got a home game coming up. But couldn't be more proud of the guys, the locker room, for playing for a full 60 minutes, and very proud of the guys.
Doug Peterson, still famous, not just for winning the Super Bowl, first in franchise history for the Eagles, but for reminding folks that wasn't as hard as, what did he say, Clint? Was it beating Wes Monroe, I think he said, or was it beating, maybe it was Evangel. Still not as hard as beating Evangel.
that's pretty great.
A tremendous sound clip. And basically, I could have inserted Evangel or Wes Monroe or maybe even Neville into that conversation. The Neville Tigers in town to take on St. Thomas More. I keep telling you, I'm going to say it again, I'm excited about that ball game. I'm not going to tell you which side I'm on, but I also don't mind telling you that I've got a gentleman's bet, right? No actual money on the line, but I've got a gentleman's bet with somebody who fancies himself as being a gentleman. He is from North Louisiana. We got a little something riding on this one. You might be surprised on which way each of us went, but I'm excited. Big ball game in Lafayette. You've got Catholic Baton Rouge and Nicar over in the capital city tonight. Big ball game there. So all across the state and South Louisiana, we're going to have some fun with week four of the high school football season. On the other side of this break, I plan to have some fun with college basketball. I'll explain that, but as we head toward that break, we now have five finalists to win themselves a brand new recliner, courtesy of Acadiana Sports Station and Bordelon's Home Furnishings. Those five finalists, we have posted photos of their ugly recliner on our website, 1037thegame.com. So go to the site, take a gander, and vote for your favorite. Voting will take place and resume through September 29th. That's this Sunday. So get them in quickly. Someone's going to win not an ugly recliner, but a brand spanking new one, courtesy of Acadiana Sports Station and Bordelon's Home Furnishings. Right back to Throw Shade. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Tails.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Gridiron debates never go out of style on Bumper to Bumper Sports, but feel free to be right anytime you're ready to start on 103.7 The Game.
Right back at it. I think I've got a good one for you today. Clint, you watch football, you understand the counterplay. I see it every single Friday night with high school football. You get the idea of misdirection. It is key in all sports. Football may be chief amongst them. I've got a little bit of misdirection. Seriously, when it comes to throwing shade, I think I've got a way to throw you off track because I don't believe you'll see this one coming. If you do, well, you're probably just the smartest guy in the room. Problem is, the other two guys are me and Clint. The bar wasn't set that high. And with that in mind, your daily reminder, a PSA locally, that no one throws shade outside your home or business like the pros at Patio Center. Go to the website, patiocenter.com, check out the retractable shades and screens, the standing seam metal awnings, and the customized patio covers with the cypress accents. And know that you can trust all of their professional installers inside your home, and you can leave all of your hopes and dreams up to the management, starting with Mark, because they're going to sit down, help you create, and then fulfill a vision
And they could do it before the big game in the Super Bowl in February. But you better hurry to their website, patiocenter.com. The kings of customization. It's never one size fits all for the licensed, insured, and bonded professionals at Patio Center.
It's time for Throwing Shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Nobody throws shade outside your home or business like Patio Center. Visit the website at patiocenter.com.
Certainly, basketball fans know who Ron Hunter is. He spent a lot of time sun-belting it up and then leading teams to the big dance, even a big win in the big dance. And then, of course, all of his histrionics on the sideline. He's now the head basketball coach, as Clint knows, and maybe even some casual sports fans know in this state. He's at Tulane. And Ed Daniels at WGNO Sports, a number of other reporters from the Big Easy, put a mic in his face as Tulane and the Green Wave started basketball practice this week. And the following came out. I find it very entertaining. And then I'll explain the misdirection.
What? I'm more worried about Tulane. But Will, you're my guy, man. I love you. Let's play. Let's get this over with, Will. Let's play a game. I'll come there. Matter of fact, let's do this. I will meet you at Lake, is it Pontchartrain? We'll put a court on Lake Pontchartrain. Let's play right now. No media. Get your guys against my guys. 5-on-5. Let's hoop it up. And let's just find out. That's what we do. So that's my invitation to Will. I love you, Will. I love LSU. But let's go play. And let's do it right now. I'm okay with that.
Ron Hunter is an absolute gem, CD. I love that sound bite. What's that lake called? Pontchartrain? We'll put a gem on Lake Pontchartrain. So that's Ron Hunter issuing a lighthearted and fun challenge to Will Wade and LSU basketball. Do not misconstrue what you just heard as shade. It's not. It's lighthearted. It's fun. But it did make me think, which is dangerous because you know that my mind works in very mysterious ways.
Yep.
Probably would never hear Bob Marlin extend an invitation to Will Wade like that. But could you imagine the hilarity of that after everything that happened in the NIT a few years ago? Here's the misdirection.
Yeah.
Bob Marlin, monotone style. Come on, Will. We'll play you anywhere. I mean, seriously, we'll set up a court on Henderson Swamp. We'll meet you right at the Atchafalaya Basin and we'll play. No cameras, no media. Just you bring your guys, we'll bring ours. It's just basketball. I kind of wish that would happen after everything that went down a few marches ago. I like the fact that the challenge was issued in a fun way from the east of Baton Rouge. But don't wait for it to happen across the basin on the west of Baton Rouge in South Louisiana. In fact, you may not even want to wait for that Christmas card, Will.
We're done throwing shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. For now, you want your life made in the shade? Visit PatioCenter.com and explore ways to improve life outside your home or business.
You knew, Clint, that I would find a way to turn that into a Wade Marlin situation.
Yes.
I have.
I figured that's where you were kind of going with that because, again, you know that these two guys just do not like each other. There's no love lost between these two cats.
Was that the world's worst Bob Marlin impression? I kind of stopped trying to do the impression after about a sentence or two.
Yeah, that was not great, mind you. I can't do that one. I'll stick with my coach phone.
I'm a big Bob fan. You know this, all right?
This is a big Bob show.
We like to play Bobby Bites
yes.
anytime that we can when we get his sound bites and we air them out on the program. But I'm not going to lie to you. He's got a Ben Stein-type quality to the voice and the delivery. I've got too much natural pitch. I have a hard time regressing to monotone. But, Bob, you're the man. Hopefully you'll permit that shade being thrown. Quick break. Another great man coming aboard. At least I think so. Glenn Gilbo. When we return, this is Bumper to Bumper Sports. The shade, it's done. We move on to the facts on 103.7 The Game.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station, and you're listening to Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game, live online at 103.7thegame.com. Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back in one final time in our 5 o'clock hour. Yeah, we'll get to the high school football at the changing of the hour, but right now we're going to go deep on LSU football, and we're going to head out to the ARDCO Equipment Hotline. Glenn Gilbo, you read him every day with the Daily Advertiser, our guest. Glenn, sorry to disrupt you during a bye week, but it's good to talk to you. How are you, man?
Good. Good. What's happening, man?
I'm still trying to decipher exactly how Joe Burrow has ascended into being a Heisman, maybe even front runner, certainly one of the lead, I guess, horses in the race, maybe even a first-round pick. Have you wrapped your mind around it?
Yes. I mean, it's the Texas game really did it. You know, that national TV game, he lit up the stats and the scoreboard. So that really did it, and it really illustrates that LSU is a large brand name, and they just haven't been doing this in a while. But as soon as they did it, you know, they're bam. Everybody knows about it. They are the talk of the nation, their offense.
Defensively, it's been a different story. How do you account for what we've seen so far? I know that the pace offensively affects them. I get that. Injuries as well. But put into words what you've seen from Dave Aranda's group.
They're not playing that well.
Fair.
That's what it is. I think the other stuff is maybe somewhat accurate, but it's more of an excuse, really. They are not aligned properly, and they've been getting game planned a little bit. And some of the big drives they've given up have been at the beginning of a game, which shoots the rest thing down, or at the beginning of a half, which also shoots the rest thing down. You know, I believe if you need rest for your defense, the defense needs to get a three and out. They do have some key injuries. There's no question about it. But the main thing is they are not game planning well against some teams that aren't very good on offense other than Texas. And Ed Orgeron really knows that, and he's not, he's not buying some of the excuses. Basically, they're too talented to play the way they have and too deep to play the way they have, which accounts for the injuries. I think they could be a lot better when they get some players back and when they start game planning better. And that's what they're working on this open week. And that's what they're going to be working on for Utah State is a good offense to go against as your last stop before the SEC. But and the thing is, they don't have to be a great defense. They just have to be pretty good. And if they can get to where they're above average on defense, this team could really go far.
Talking LSU football with our guy Glenn Gilbo with the Daily Advertiser on 103.7 The Game. Take me back to when Ed Orgeron was named a full-time head coach. Your thoughts on maybe what the hire could have been and so far how you would grade it out knowing – the upward trajectory seems to be going on.
Well, I've talked about and written about that enough. I mean, and I need to say that I was wrong. I was not for the Orgeron hire, but he is, I thought Jimbo Fisher should have gotten the job, and that could have happened. But, you know, Coach O has really done very well on the field with his hires, particularly. He's made some great hires. And, he's recruiting extremely well, which we kind of thought would happen, but he is recruiting nationally and he's about to put together the best two back-to-back classes they've had since 03 and 04, which those two classes really won the 07 national championship. So, Coach O is doing very well. He's doing better than really Tom Herman or Jimbo Fisher at this point. He had a head start on Jimbo, Herman, to me, Herman has the LSU job is easier than the A&M job, but the Texas job is easier than the LSU job, I would say. It's really something that he has changed this offense, the culture of the offense, the production of the offense, and it's something to see.
And, you know, I always appreciate your candor. I didn't ask you that to put you on the spot, but you know darn good well you weren't the only one that felt that way. I was very dubious about the idea of, I guess, what this D-line coach traditionally, right, a guy who was great as an interim, how is he going to change the offense? It's exactly what you just said. It's kind of remarkable to think about somebody with his background who struggled to kind of be the CEO at Ole Miss, and right now it seems to be working. It's obvious he's learned a lot from that experience, especially in Oxford.
Yeah, I got to tell you, what Bobby Hebert told me the day after Ed got hired, he saw my column, And he said, hey, you know, Bill Belichick wasn't great in his first job. Now, Belichick was, he did take the Browns to the playoffs, and he did do, actually did do pretty well. But his point is, you know, sometimes that first coaching job, you learn a lot. And Coach Orgeron's been very candid about that. And he obviously learned a lot from when he was the head coach at Ole Miss. And he's also got a lot more to use and resources at LSU and talent than he had at Ole Miss. But, you know, it is funny, though. He's a defensive guy, and his defense is the problem right now. But he's got his offense solved. I mean, it looks great. I don't know how it's going to be when Joe Burrow leaves, because he's the main reason the offense is good, I would say. But it is kind of funny, because the last time they had a really good passing offense, the defense was really bad, 2013, you know. So they finally got an offense, and they got to worry about defense. But the defense, I think, can still really be good.
Glenn, we've gone in on LSU football so far. Give me a broad strokes view of right now the New Orleans Saints, and understanding that Drew Brees is out for at least the next 5 weeks. Big win at Seattle. I think they're playing with house money in this game Sunday night against the Cowboys. But what you think they are until Brees comes back, and can they do enough to right the ship when he returns?
Oh, that was a huge win at Seattle. And you know, I think Teddy Bridgewater is just going to get better and better. I mean, he was better this past week than he was the first week when he just kind of got thrown in there after Brees got hurt. And you know, Sean Payton, first and foremost, he's a quarterback coach. So, and he's got a lot of time to focus on Teddy Bridgewater. So I think you're going to see him continue to improve. He's very talented. And, you know, if Brees comes back and he's not quite all there, you know, and does not play well, because, you know, his finger's not better. That's a very, excuse the expression, it's very touchy, because he's a very much, everything about Brees is his accuracy and his touch. You know, he's not a bomber. So, it's going to be interesting to see how he does when he comes back. And if it doesn't work, you know, they might have to go back to Bridgewater. I mean, we're getting a little ahead of ourselves, but that's a scenario. So, but yeah, if everything goes right and Bridgewater keeps winning, Brees will get plugged back in, and they could you know, go as far as everyone thinks they could. But I really like how Bridgewater played this past week, and I think the Saints, you know, are looking like the Super Bowl contender that we thought they'd be in that win over Seattle. At Seattle, very big win.
So, Glenn, we'll connect now. LSU and the Saints, and Larry Holder with The Athletic, an interesting column earlier this week. The Saints looking, monitoring Joe Burrow. So much has to happen, right? We don't know where the Saints are going to pick. We don't know how high Burrow could climb. But your thoughts on even the possibility of the Saints finally taking an LSU guy, aside from like Will Clapp, and maybe having a quarterback of the future?
Well, you know, I don't know if the Saints are going to be able to pick high enough to get Joe, because the way he's going, you know, he could be picked pretty high. And, you know, it is amazing that he's already becoming, you know, being talked about as a first-round pick. But he has everything, you know. He's a coach on the field. He's very advanced with film study. He's getting some very good coaching from Joe Brady, who's been in the NFL, not at a big position like coordinator or something, but he's been there. He knows that game. So that can only help him. And, you know, I think I've always thought Steve Ensminger is a very good offensive coordinator too. So everything is just working right now. And I don't think you'll see Burrow with the Saints, but, you know, maybe they could get some other quarterback, because there's quite a few of them that will be up for the draft next year or very soon. You know, Burrow is, frankly, I think he's the best all-around quarterback LSU's ever had. He might not be the best passer. He doesn't hum it like Russell or Mettenberger, but he can run better than those guys. And he's probably the best leader at quarterback LSU's had. Hodson was a pretty good leader, but, you know, this is a fiery Jim McMahon-type leader that Burrow is. So, and you got that whole thing. His dad was a coach, and he's a coach on the field. So everything is working for that pass offense.
Strong words, and I love the analysis. Glenn Gilbo has been our guest. Hey, before we let you go, no LSU tomorrow. How will Glenn spend his day?
Well, I got to tell you, I'm just posting a cool feature, I hope, on the 1979 LSU-USC game. I spent most of the week on that, and that should be up. And so y'all need to definitely take a look at that. That was a lot of fun to do. It was a long time ago. How old were you when that game was played, Ben?
5 years after that, my parents thought I'd be a good idea.
I thought so. But you can still go back and research, man.
I got to do a lot of that when I was at Tiger Ag Magazine. I'm going to check that piece out as well at the Daily Advertiser. Glenn, thank you so much. Enjoy the weekend. I'll give you some feedback on what happened, you know, before my birth.
All right, Ben, thank you.
You're the man. Glenn Gilbo. How old was I then? Come on now. Now, you know what's really interesting about that? We're going to tie a lot of things together here, Clint. You're going to have to help me out. I know I'm going to forget his name. Oh, my. The USC coach who was still at USC, like when Keyshawn and company came through in the mid-90s. I want to say Robinson, John Robinson. Come on now. Your Google machine's got to work that quickly. Point is, the dude's basically like a coach emeritus. You know what I mean? He's an ambassador at LSU. Clint's giving me the thumbs up. I think John Robinson was involved somehow, some way in that 79 game. Whether he is or was not, Clint doesn't have time to correct me because the hour's over. We've had a lot of fun. Andrew Lopez, Justin Vincent, and you just heard Glenn Gilbo. On the other side of this break, 30 minutes previewing Week 4 in the high school football season. I'm fired up for football night in Acadiana. I'm going to get RP3. We'll be right back in. So don't go anywhere. This has been Bumper to Bumper Sports. FNA, the pregame edition, up next on 103.7 The Game.